Good afternoon. Welcome to the Commerce Committee on February 18th, 2020. A quorum is present. We have an order of business to approve the minutes. Representative Stevenson, have you had a chance to peruse the minutes?
I have, Madam Chair, and this time I would move approval of our minutes from February 11th, 2020.
Representative Stevenson moves approval of minutes from February 11th, 2020. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. That was crooked. I wasn't trying to make a super loud rap there. It just look. Just yes. Now what's next? So the first item on our agenda with regard to bills and legislation is a procedural motion to refer bills that have been heard and passed out of this committee to the House floor. These bills have each had hearings with the opportunity for testimony. No additional testimony is going to be taken at this time. We're going to refer them back to the House floor because they've all been thoroughly vetted. And that is standard procedure generally for these. The minutes from the previous meetings when we did hear these bills are in members' packets in case you want to refresh your memory on the testimony that we heard. And the bills that we will be re-referring are to the General Register, our House File 12 from Representative Cantrell, House File 1121 from Representative Joachim, and House File 1501 from Representative Daphne. We need a motion to re-refer, and then we can take discussion. It's been moved to re-refer House File 12, House File 1121, and House File 50. We have to do them one at a time. Okay, so our first motion then would be to re-refer House File 12 to the General Register. Do we have a motion? We have a motion to re-refer House File 12 to the General Register. Discussion, Representative Swazinski.
Madam Chair, are we allowed to debate these motions?
Representative Swazinski, you're allowed to do whatever you want, but we will vote on them. Well, not whatever you want, but when it comes to debate and discussion, you have the floor, and if you wanted to debate something, please do. Okay. Thank you. Additional discussion. All right. So it's been moved to re-refer House File 12 to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? No. The motion prevails. Need a motion to re-refer House File 1121 to the General Register. Representative Mahoney moves that we re-refer House File 1121 to the General Register. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The motion prevails. Third, we have House File 1501 to re-refer to the General Register. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Representative Dean moves that we re-refer House File 1501 to the General Register. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion prevails, and our three bills are re-referred. We've got a first bill on the agenda is going to be 80. Okay. We're double-checking our list of testifiers. Welcome to the committee, Representative Claflin. So, members, is there a motion to move House File 1380 to get it properly in front of us and re-refer it to the Environment Policy Committee? Go for it.
I will make a
Representative Stevenson.
I would move File
1380. Be re-referred to Environment Policy.
Be re-referred to Environment.
Representative Stevenson moves that House File 3180 be re-referred to the Environment Policy Committee. Representative Claflin, to your bill. Welcome to the committee. And then you can just introduce yourself for the record, and we'll get you moving.
Thank you, Chair Halverson. Yes, I am Representative Claflin, bringing House File 3180.
And this bill would ban the use of per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances in food and beverage packaging. This is a very important bill for me and my district because we have PFAS contamination in the East Metro. But it's also an important bill for all Minnesotans and really all people because we're eating food from packages that contain these chemicals that are known to be toxic and cause human health harms. And they are migrating into our food, especially through packages like microwave popcorn bags and fast food wrappers. We have alternatives available, and we should be using safer alternatives. This bill does have the enforcement authority through the Pollution Control Agency to ensure that we're not eating food that's been contaminated with these chemicals. And I have a few folks with me today who will also testify in support of this bill. I have Jenna Grove from Clean Water Action, Tim Gratke from the City of Hutchinson. Although I think that one may be for the following, yes, that's for the following bill. And then Dave Banky and Steve Giddings from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
Okay, so we'll hear from Ms. Grove first, and then Mr. Banky and Mr. Giddings will be on deck, because that sounds like a plan. Okay. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Halverson and committee members, I'm Jenna Grove. I'm here to speak in support of the bill on behalf of Clean Water Action and Healthy Legacy Coalition. I am fighting the flu today, so I'm just going to keep it brief. Right, I know, I'm like, I swear, it's not coronavirus. It's not.
People have been saying that to you for a long time, and you've never listened.
Let's come back into, clearly, let's get back on track. It's late in the day, but not that late, so.
I hear you.
Give us a couple more hours before we go off the silly train. Ms. Grove.
Well, in that case, I will not beat around the bush. The chemical industry has been misrepresenting the alleged safety of a multitude of chemicals for the beginning of time, pretty much, to avoid regulation and liability for exposure. And frankly, they have done a good job. The chemicals up for discussion today are a very good example of that. These perfluorinated chemicals, PFAS, are a class of thousands of chemicals that are used in products we use every day. That said, they have been around since, I believe, the late 30s and have caused cancer, birth defects, kidney disease, preeclampsia in pregnant women. And those health effects I just mentioned are only results from an epidemiological study on two of the chemicals out of thousands. And those two were finally phased out in the year 2000 voluntarily. I don't know what took so long after having those kind of effects, but we'll leave that up for discussion. That said, the chemicals still used today in products like Teflon pans, raincoats, boots, food packaging are still known to cause some pretty adverse health effects. And more often than not, a lot of reports, a lot of studies have been concealed. A recent one from just earlier this summer brought to light by the FDA saying that they're still finding the original two perfluorinated chemicals in our food. That said, I think, there's plenty of study out there. It's been literally decades, over half of a century, and nothing has changed, which goes to show you that absent regulation, business will continue as usual. And as Representative Claflin said, there are alternatives. There has been testing done, and companies, I think over 50, that have chosen to stop using fluorine-based chemicals in their food packaging. And the tests done by an independent study revealed that. So companies are using these alternatives. They are just as effective. The opponents of this bill have a vested interest in keeping these chemicals in commerce. The proponents of this bill, our only interest is to protect the public health and community quality of life.
Thank you for your testimony. If you can stick around, we'll hear from the other two testifiers and then have the public and then see about discussion. Next up, Mr. Benke, Mr. Gideons. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, my name is Dave Benke. I'm the Director of the Resource Management Assistance Division at the Pollution Control Agency. And one of the areas that we work heavily in is solid waste management. And one of the things that we share the concerns here with these chemicals is as they're showing up in the waste stream, our management of those could become limited if the chemicals persist and it influences the way we manage the waste. And by that I mean landfills that we dispose of waste in create leachate, and the leachate needs to get managed after that. If it contains these chemicals, it limits our ability to manage that. Also, as we embark on further organic waste diversion from the waste stream, managing organic material for compost, we've also looked at the contact water from the compost and have seen a trend that the chemicals are showing up in that. And so we'd like to get this removed if possible, and that would help out our management activities from the agency. The other part of the bill that I wanted to just mention was the enforcement piece. We've had a real, I think, successful look at children's products and materials in there, working with Commerce and the Department of Health and working on those. You may have recently seen our work on Beyblades, which is a little toy that kids use. A lot of the knockoff brands ended up having lead in it, and our ability to enforce in on that material was successful in getting those removed from being sold in the state. So that work with Commerce and the Department of Health is really important. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you for your testimony. Did you have a partner that was going to testify with you, or are you flying solo today?
Flying solo today.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, sure.
So those are the three that I had on my list. Is there anybody else that was going to testify that I missed or that? Welcome to the committee, Mr. Quellis. And I know you've been here before, and we try to do about 3 minutes if you can, and I have
will,
no
Madam
doubt
Chair,
you can do that.
This is the beginning of Representative Claflin and I spending some quality time together over the next couple of days and over the next two bills. My name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to spend a couple minutes, just as you said, Madam Chair, on House File 3108 and point out just a couple of areas of concern from my point of view. Madam Chair, when we talk about PFAS, and you had heard Ms. Grove mention a little bit of it, the class of this chemical includes thousands of chemicals and thousands of applications. And so when we say PFAS, and then we cross-reference it into the definitions here, including any food or beverage, any shipping container, cups, pails, rigid foils, trays, wrappers, films, tubs, and also any components of that, how far-reaching that components all go along those, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point that out to you and just to think about how the brevity, or not the brevity, but the impact of what's going on. Also, because food packaging touches food, it's regulated by the Food and Drug Administration as a food additive. And it is regulated under the Food and Drug Cosmetic Act and is actually referred to as a food contact substance. It's not allowed to be sold on the market or distributed only by prior authorization of the FDA and only if it's safe for its intended use. They require upfront scientific data, and they also have automatic veto power, I'll go, because they are constantly ongoing safety review and monitoring of these products, Madam Chair. Two other states have done this, but they've taken different approaches to it. And I want to draw your attention to those and just kind of point them out. One of them was the state of Maine, but Maine went through an effective date of 2022, but they also asked their equivalent of the Pollution Control Agency to come back and identify safer alternatives, make sure they're readily available in sufficient quantity at a comparable cost. And they had an exemption in there that dealt with a $1 billion exemption. Madam Chair, I also want to draw your attention to the state of Washington. They only did it to fiber-based products, but they also required safer alternatives and evaluate the alternatives. And there's an extensive public engagement process there, along with manufacturers, product manufacturers, academia, environmental groups, and government entities, Madam Chair. So I just wanted to point that out. Industry is moving towards this. They're going along these lines. They found the alternatives on some of them, but not all of them. And then finally, Madam Chair, I just wanted to point out on the effective date that we usually have what I call the manufacturer retail lag. There's, because products are moving through the system, and then this has got an actual deadline on it of January 1st. So there'll be products in the system that will still be moving forward. And I just wanted to point that out, Madam Chair, as we move through. I'll be here for questions, and thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else from the public who wishes to speak for or against this bill? Seeing none, we can move to discussion. I don't see anybody on my list. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Madam Chair, what was the motion?
The motion was to re-refer this bill to environment policy. Further discussion. Representative Mahoney.
Representative Claflin, just so I understand it, now this is a statewide ban on PFAS?
Representative Claflin.
Chair and Representative Mahoney, yes, this would be a statewide ban on the use of any of these PFAS chemicals in food and beverage packaging within the state of Minnesota. And there are other states that are considering legislation like this. And as Mr. Aquilas mentioned, other states have passed legislation as well.
So how,
Representative Mahoney.
So if it's food and beverage, is that 50%, 75%, or 100% of the chemicals that are being used? I know in your district, it's, you know, there's a stream underneath that's throwing some stuff out there. So I have a lot of friends that live out in your neck of the woods. And when I was door knocking for you, I didn't realize how many of my friends lived out there. You live out here too? So I guess my question is, how much is this going to take care of the problem? Because you went to court, you've got some other things going on. How much can we clean up this chemical that's happening out in Cottage Grove in Dakota County?
Representative Claflin.
Chair and Representative Mahoney, this is only a portion of the chemicals, of this PFAS class of chemicals that we're being exposed to. But it is a way that we're being exposed to these PFAS chemicals that's especially concerning because we are taking them directly into our bodies. These chemicals are also used in our carpeting, in stain proofing, on the waterproofing of our clothes. They're used for a variety of different purposes. But banning PFAS from food and beverage packaging addresses one of those specific ways that we're exposed.
Hmm. Representative Mahoney, follow up?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Additional discussion. Representative Spazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so maybe you went over this, but just a scenario. Let's say you have a food manufacturer that is it food, packaging that actually comes in physical contact with food itself, or let's say it's plastic, let's say you've got a pallet of hot dogs and it's wrapped with a plastic that keeps the pallet together. Would that plastic, because it's packaging food, have to meet these requirements?
Representative Claflin.
Chair and Representative Swidzinski, I am quickly reviewing the language, and food package in the definition means a package or packaging component intended to market, protect, or handle a product intended for food or beverage contact or used to store food or a beverage for sale. So I would think that has to come into contact with the food products.
Representative Stasinski.
So, Madam Chair, so direct contact. So let's say you've got chicken. It'd be the plastic that is wrapped around a chicken package, but the tape that would hold the box together or the plastic that would surround the pallet that had that together would not have to.
Representative Claflin.
I would look to our researchers to help answer questions about definitions, but from my reading of the definition, anything outside of the food contact package would not fit that definition.
Okay. So I understand there is an analyst from the Environment Committee who might know the answer to that. Are we phoning a friend? You may come down. And if you'd like to join Representative Claflin at the table, you can. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name and let us know your analysis.
Madam Chair, I'm Janelle Taylor. I'm with House Research, and if the question could be repeated, and I'm going to say right off the bat, I did not draft the language, so I don't know the exact tense. It'll just be whatever my reading is.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, so essentially the question is, so I think I understand that if, let's say you have a cellophane wrap that's around a package of chicken like you'd see in the grocery store. What I'm asking is, let's say you have the box, let's say there's 12 in a box, and then you'd have the plastic that would be the tape that would actually keep the box closed. And then also if you have a box of pallets, so you got 48 pallets on a single pallet, the plastic that would wrap. And so normal shipping practices that would ship food product or anything that's boxed, would that plastic, because it comes in contact with a food box, would that plastic then in total have to, and then it talks about shipping container, would the semi-truck in which is the shipping container which carries the product itself to the market, would that also have to have not have that in there as well?
I'm sorry, can you repeat your name?
Madam Chair, Janelle Taylor.
Ms. Taylor, you can answer that question if you're able.
Madam Chair, members, I don't believe that would be the intent, and I'm looking at line 1.16 when it's sort of narrowing it to an individual assembled part when it's looking at packaging component. So we're getting down to the individual level, not the actual packaging of something, you know, like a pallet per se.
Representative,
but it could probably be clarified.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. Representative Swazinski, do you have a follow-up on that?
I think so. I think I'm okay for now.
Okay. And I think I heard the words that it could be clarified. I think perhaps before the next committee step, if you want to clarify, it sounds like you had pretty clear intent with the bill. And so often when we get into committee, we get good questions that make us clarify our intent. And so if you have the opportunity to do that, is that something that you would like to do?
Yes, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Claflin. Representative Lislegard.
It does. Thank you, Madam Chair. Hot dogs and chicken are one thing, but you mentioned microwave popcorn. Can you walk me through, I mean, because I love microwave popcorn, so you're, I mean, if this is an issue, explain how this affects me and how it can get past the Food and Drug Administration.
It says,
you, Representative Lister, I think we're all taking a. I'm taking a inventory of my house too. Representative Claflin.
Thank you, Chair Halverson. And Representative Lislegard, I'd be happy to describe how these chemicals get into our bodies from the food that we're eating. And microwave popcorn bags are coated with these PFAS chemicals. They are grease-proofing agents. It's what keeps your microwave popcorn bag from getting all greasy. Especially when exposed to heat, those chemicals will migrate out of the plastic coatings and into our food. So heating up that hot oil in our microwave, the PFAS chemicals are getting into our popcorn.
How much did that
So I know. I would recommend switching to stovetop popcorn, air popped. There's a lot of ways for us to get our popcorn fix. I also really like popcorn.
Thank you for that answer. Additional discussion, questions, members? Going once. Seeing no additional discussion. Any final words, Representative Claflin?
Thank you very much for considering this bill. I think this is very important for stopping an exposure to these toxic chemicals and for also getting them out of our whole environment. We need to get them out of our waste stream as well as out of our daily lives.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the motion to re-refer House File 3180 to the Environment Policy Committee, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you. And Ms. Representative Claflin gets to stay, and we will hear House File 3181. Welcome back to the committee. let everybody switch out their folders. And you may proceed on your bill when you are ready, Representative Claflin. Oh, we need a motion. My apologies. We, same committee.
Madam Chair, I would move that 3181 be referred to the Environmental Policy Committee.
Representative Stevenson moves that House File 3181 be referred to Environment Policy. Representative Claflin, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Halverson. House File 3181 refers to some labeling standards for the disposable wipes that many of us use, again, throughout our daily lives. These disposable wipes are not all flushable wipes and must be disposed of in the trash. They often, however, are mistakenly flushed and cause enormous and rather disgusting problems for our cities to have to deal with that end up costing our cities quite a bit of money. These non-flushable wipes will cause fatbergs in our sewers where they become a conglomeration of these fabrics and fats and other materials that clog up our sewers, and the cities have to clear those clogs. They will also clog the pumps and cause a number of other maintenance difficulties. There are flushable versions of these wipes, and they are used by a number of people for various reasons. And I don't want to completely get rid of our ability to use these wipes, just to make sure that our pipes stay clean. So this is proposing a labeling standard for the flushable wipes and some standards that are already developed by the Association of Non-Woven Fabrics Industry. And with that labeling standard and that testing standard, we would have the ability to educate people about what is and is not flushable and how to properly dispose of these materials. And we would be able to enforce this rule or this law against folks that are mislabeling their products. I have a few people with me today to testify in favor of this bill. I have Craig Johnson from the League of Minnesota Cities, who will talk about the impact to our cities, and Tim Gracke from City of Hutchinson, Frank Stumke from the Minnesota Rural Water Association, and then Greta Gauthier and Dana Vanderbosch from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
Thank you. I also understand that Mike Cuno is going to testify. Is he going to testify with you, Mr. Johnson, or?
Madam Chair, he's going to talk about the same sorts of things the other city people here present are, so maybe Okay. It would work better to have them come up as a group.
Yeah, if the folks from the cities want to come up, that would be great, and you can proceed while they begin their while they come down. So Mike Cuno, Tim Gatke, come on down.
Madam Chair, we'll find
you a chair.
Thank you very much. And members of the committee, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. I will keep my comments pretty short because you're going to hear from the people who actually work on these systems every day, and they're going to have a lot more direct information for you and some pictures, I'm sorry to say. But important part of this. So the League of Minnesota Cities has, as many of you I'm sure already know, represents all the cities in the state of Minnesota. There's 853 cities, 832 of them are members of the League. The ones that aren't are very, very small, and if they call our office, we'd still help them. But this issue has been a priority issue of our members for a number of years now. A bill on this that was significantly more extensive than this, had a bunch of other language in it, did pass the Senate about 5 years ago. Was not discussed in the House in that particular session. So we are pleased that the issue has come back up for discussion this year. The short version of this is a very significant problem. Even very small community sewer systems are seeing tremendous impacts as these products are contributing to causing the plugs that we're seeing. Cities spend a tremendous amount of time and money responding to these, but they also spend a tremendous amount of time and money trying to educate the public in what shouldn't be going into their waste system. So everything from teaching people not to put chemicals and paints and things down their drains to trying to teach them which products you shouldn't put down your toilet, which products, you know, you shouldn't put matchbox cars in either. You know, there's a long list of things you really shouldn't be putting down the pipe. And we try and make sure people are thinking about those things as they deal with their daily waste issues. But we can't do that if we don't have good information for the public. So if the labels don't exist, it's hard to tell people what they can flush and what they can't. If the labels aren't to a standard that protects the pipes, it doesn't help us at all, because something could be labeled that says it's okay to put it in, and it turns out it's not, that it will contribute to the problem. Now, are these flushable or non-flushable wipes the only problem? No, not at all. There are many other things that get into our systems, as many of these guys can attest to. But they are a significant part of it, and they are a strong enough material that if they get flushed, they very quickly can contribute to forming one of these larger blockages that can take out hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment in a very short period of time. So I will leave the details on this to the folks from the cities to talk about, but I will be happy to stay and provide any information or answers I am able to as well, and very much appreciate the committee taking the time to discuss this issue. It's a kind of an awkward one to discuss, but it's an important one, so thank you.
Thank you, and just for everybody's information, we're passing around the images that were promised, and go ahead and view them at your own risk. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Tim Gratke, and I'm the wastewater treatment manager for the city of Hutchinson. And those are my pictures of events that have happened in my city in the last 5 years that you are viewing. So sorry to see the cringes on your faces. I have over 25 years experience in wastewater treatment, most of which was in industry, the last 5 years of which has been in municipal treatment operations. I'm asked to appear here today to give testimony on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities and municipalities that are all having issues with wipes products being disposed of via the toilet into the sanitary collection system and ultimately received by the treatment facility. My interest in House File 3181 is that despite all of our best efforts to combat the effects of wipes in the wastewater stream, wipes materials are still costing the wastewater facility and thus the taxpayers and ratepayers hundreds of thousands of dollars each year due to increased expenditures, maintenance hours required to fix or unclog equipment, and additional capital expenditures to add equipment necessary to handle these wipes materials, or in claims for damage mitigation paid to residents due to sanitary pipe blockages and the resultant backups in their of wastewater into their homes. I believe that this bill requiring the mandatory labeling of wipe material as either clearly flushable or not is a necessary first step in the long path to solving the wipes issues plaguing our municipal treatment systems. In my opinion, it is only just that, a first step. Recent studies from INDA, the Association of Nonwoven Fabrics Industry, have shown that while efforts have increased by manufacturers of white materials to include proper labeling of their products on the outside of the packaging, the flushing of non-flushable materials has increased throughout the last decade. A study from 2012 of flushed materials identified at pump station inlet screens showed that only 8% of that material was wipes that were truly labeled as flushable. The remainder of the material was non-flushable paper, like paper towels, napkins, facial tissues, non-flushable baby wipes, non-flushable household cleaning wipes, and non-flushable feminine hygiene products. A study performed in 2016 showed that the percentage of truly flushable wipes had compromised the materials collected in the same manner as the 2012 study was reduced to only 2% being flushable. Now, you think that may be great news. You know, we see a reduction of the flushable wipes material in a waste stream, but it's exactly the opposite. More of the material collected on the screens were of the non-flushable product type, which means that people either are not observing the labels placed upon the packaging or more likely don't care because it's now become a habit, human nature, to throw things resembling a flushable wipe into the toilet instead of the trash receptacle. We need to see the mindset of the American homeowner begin to change around the use of proper disposable of wipes materials. In the 5 years that I've been in my position with the city of Hutchinson, we have experienced two fully clogged valves in the force mains that deliver the wastewater from the main pumping stations to the preliminary treatment process of the wastewater treatment facility. The first clogged valve, which occurred 1 week before I started in my position 5 years ago, was 8 inches in diameter and remained inoperable until construction of a $250,000 piping project could be completed so that we could divert the incoming wastewater flow to an equalization basin while we swapped out that clogged valve. In 2016, we spent over $60,000 on a project to add a solids grinder to the inlet of our hats lift station, similar to those that are already in the wastewater channels at our main lift station. Even though we have these grinders in place at both major lift stations, wipes materials continue to get through them and appear on our plant influence screens at the same shape as they were flushed. And there is a picture of that also. If the wipes happen to be affected by the grinders, it usually means that they become shredded and end up as elongated strands of fiber material that wreak havoc with pump impellers and valve bodies, ultimately ending up in a giant rag ball and a clog in some portion of the conveyance system. Our most recent bout with a wipes clogged valve came just last fall when a 10-inch valve from our main lift station became plugged with the wipes materials. Luckily, we had the forethought in the first project to put in bypass piping for those force mains. Also, we were able to use that in order to change that valve out. The staff of the wastewater treatment plant, along with the assistance of other public works employees, spent over 240 man hours extracting over 10 cubic yards of wipes materials out of our headworks wet well in an effort to prevent these valves from becoming clogged in the future. Next year, we plan to replace our maintenance vehicle at the plant, normally only a half-ton pickup costing about $30,000, with a large hoist truck costing nearly three times as much due to having to retrieve and unplug our own lift pumps in the stations because of the increased frequency that these wipes are causing pluggings. These are just a few ways that wipes have increased our expenses at the wastewater treatment plant. Throughout the past 5 years, we have had numerous stories published in a local newspaper in an effort to make local residents aware of the costs associated with flushing wipes material down the toilet. We have sent out informational brochures in the utility bill mailings, gave presentations to city council, where the meetings are televised locally, and have wipes information on our products on our city website and Facebook pages, and held open houses for the people to view firsthand how wipes are costing them taxpayer and ratepayer funds. There needs to be state and nationwide awareness campaigns on this matter for us to begin to work towards solving this issue. The bill is a good first step. Thank you for your time and your attention in this matter.
Representative Swazinski, do you want to ask a question of this testifier?
Yeah, okay. If I could.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of a quick question. You say this would be a great first step. What would be your second, third, fourth step? If I used to build water treatment plants back in the day, so I'm fairly familiar with some of these things, but you know, what would be the next thing you want to do after this? Because it sounds like what you've been doing has not worked.
Madam Chair, Representative, I guess the next step is exactly what I said. We need to have an awareness campaign. I think the use of these wipes, whether they be marked, labeled, flushable or not, is just habit now. There is the thought that I'm not even looking anymore. We're just going to grab every wipe that seems to be similar to a flushable wipe is now deposited because it's icky, and who wants that in their trash? They throw it in the open toilet and flush it down their toilet.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just looking at the photos you passed around, like obviously, you know, matchbox cars and all that other stuff is in there. How can you tell what that is? Like when you're looking at that black ball of gook, like you're saying it's flush, it's just a flushing, non-flush. Like, have you like literally dissected each of those balls of gook to figure out what exactly, as a percentage, what's in there, what's not, what's contributing, what's not? I mean, or is it kind of you just blanket? Is it more of a blanket statement you're kind of used to convey your position?
I think this is the first committee hearing we've ever heard the words icky and gook. So we're super technical. I like it.
Science.
Science. Mr. Gregke.
Yes, Madam Chairman. Sure. We looked at, like I said, the picture of, say, this right ball, that first valve that we had. That sticks out for a full 4 feet, 2 feet out each side of the valve. You can clearly see that is ground up, shredded wipes materials. There may be a shredded T-shirt or something that's involved in that, but for the most part, we would say that this is mainly wipes materials. I hope that answers your question. We haven't had it sent out or analyzed or CSI or anything.
So before we move on, a couple things for the other testifiers as questions that are coming up in my head that you guys might be answering is what are the dollar signs that we're looking at for your city? If anybody's got some dollars, I'd be super interested in that as well. So as you continue to testify, I'd be interested. Mr. Kuno or? Nope, go ahead. Whoever wants to go first.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for allowing me to present today. And really, thank you for dedicating your time to understand this issue. This is an important issue for the City of Minnetonka. The Minnetonka sewer system, we have about 53,000 residents. Our system, we operate and maintain 39 lift stations and 260 miles of sanitary sewer pipe in the city. So essentially the equivalent of a pipe running from here to Grand Marais is our sanitary system. And wipes are a significant contributing factor to sewer backups and lift station failures in our city. Looking at the impacts specifically to pipe backups, the City of Minnetonka, we're fortunate enough to be a larger city, and we have sufficient budget that we have purchased our own jetting truck, so we are able to clean our own sewer system. Through that process, we clean approximately 100 miles of pipe annually. So that is about one half of a full-time staff person over the course of a year, just cleaning our sanitary sewer pipes. Regular sewer pipe cleaning maintenance occurs every 3 years, so we're on a three-year cycle. And then backup areas move to a six-month cycle. So when we have an identified backup, those areas will get cleaned twice a year instead of once every 3 years. So looking at that, approximately 15 miles of our sewer pipe every year is cleaned due to backups that we've experienced in our system. Due to our maintenance schedule, it's well documented. When we do have a backup that causes damage in a home, we are rarely responsible or liable for damages in that house, because we can show that we have done this maintenance. So at that point, those costs fall back to the homeowner. You can have a homeowner that does not dispose of wipes in their house, and they can have a sewer backup due to their neighbors disposing of these wipes and causing a backup in the sewer main. So, you know, those costs can be $10,000 to $20,000 for sewer backup damages in a house, depending on the level of backup and the their basement. So there are real costs associated with that, and those homeowners are suffering the consequences. Our lift stations, we have a regular maintenance program where we inspect and clean each of our 39 lift stations annually. In addition to that, on average, we are out at least once a week pulling pumps that are clogged. And it's not all wipes, but it is a significant contributing factor to those pumps being clogged. We have added grinder pump stations or special impellers to 5 of our 39 lift stations to try and do a better job with these wipes to get them through the system. That's at a cost of $20,000 to $30,000 per lift station. So we've spent approximately $150,000 on these special pumps, and are looking at another $850,000 to $1 million to do that to the rest of our 34 lift stations. And that's, you know, cost is just one consideration. There's the real life impacts of when things go wrong too. We had our Woodgate lift station December 23rd, 11 p.m. December 23rd, 2019. We had a high level warning on that lift station. An operator went out and tried to reset the lift station. The pumps were so clogged that it actually caused a short circuit and burnt out our panel. So we had to mobilize 4 staff at 2 a.m. on December 24th to go out and bring our vac truck and start manually pumping that lift station to prevent a backup in those homes. Fortunately, we were able to get an electrician out on Christmas Eve day, and he was able to temporarily fix the panel. We were able to unclog one of the pumps and get that lift station back and operational by 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Christmas Eve day, so we didn't have to manually pump that lift station through Christmas. So it's, you know, cost is one consideration, but the impacts of this are, you know, often it's an emergency, it's not regular business hours, it's a significant impact to our staff. So I really appreciate the effort to talk here today. I just hope that we can make every effort to keep wipes out of the sewer system, and that includes just clear labels to help people so that they know what should and should not be flushed. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And Mr. Is this Stemke. Welcome to the committee. Okay. You can correct your name for the record and proceed.
Thanks, Madam Chair and the committee members. My name is Frank Stemke, and I am here representing Minnesota Rural Water Association. I'll give you a little background on what I do or what we do at Minnesota Rural Water. In the past 28 years that I've worked in the industry, for the past 16 years with Minnesota Rural Water, we provide training and technical assistance to all communities across the state of Minnesota. So as you heard from Tim, wastewater supervisor in Hutch, and Mike Kuno in Minnetonka, we kind of look at things from a 30,000-foot view, and I just want to share a little bit of the things that we're seeing and maybe set a little of a history in place to understand where this has evolved from and what our industry folks are doing or engineers or new projects are entailing to move forward. So I want to share this message in today's hearing about obviously the disposable wipe industry and how utilities have truly had to evolve and change their ways of dealing with infrastructure that's in place. You know, years back, I don't know if any of you are familiar, but if you've seen a lift station, there used to be a little blinking red light on them when something failed, correct? Well, nowadays, in the world in which we live, we have had to evolve in one way rather quickly, whether it's a small town of 200 or whether it's a large town of 200,000, that all these systems are set up and developed, or a SCADA system or a real-time 24/7, I guess, a telemetry-based unit that's going to let us know at any point in time when we have a lift station failure. Why? Well, we all know that the costs of 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 homes in a sewer backup can cost, you know, $250,000, $350,000, $450,000 rather quickly. So even in the rural areas and large areas, when you put a dollar figure to it, I know it's in the millions, but there we are forced to adapt in the industry. And Mike talked a little bit about pumps and manufacturers. It's absolutely amazing. A lot of our technology comes from Europeans. And Mike had talked about how we've changed our foresight to how we actually pump these wipes through our collection systems. And it's a huge cost expense to these rural communities or large communities to actually deal with this. So their mindset has even gone even more forward. Now, does it work? We're finding that some of these pumps will work. However, when these what I'll call non-disposable wipes are shredded, they actually can form a textile that they actually kind of, when they meet, they grab and they grow. So as we saw, I don't mean grow literally, but what I'm saying is they actually can tie themselves together and create these awful large plugs. So with the adaptations that a lot of communities are having to add on prior to lift stations, and I'm going to get, we talked about Gook and some scientific, Guck. Well, there's some pretty scientific terminology that we've used from sewer chewers to muffin monsters, pump station sumps. A muffin monster, a sewer chewer, literally is a device that's put in place prior to a lift station that shreds everything that comes through, from matchbox cars to 2x4s to shoes to shirts. And what it does is it obviously shreds them into smaller particles. However, the wipe industry and the man-made materials actually grow. They tighten together these textiles, and they actually create large blobs. Not to make this at all a funny, however, some of us maybe are familiar with the Addams Family sitcom that played back. Remember Cousin It? Remember Little Cousin It? A lot of times when these pumps are pulled or valves are pulled, the Cousin It hits the Facebook or hits your photos and just truly kind of helps people understand how bad this really is. So if you can imagine all the I saw some faces kind of curl up their lips and say, and this is not real neat stuff, but Cousin It comes to mind, and it's a huge problem, okay? So just to kind of to set that stage, and these guys did an awesome job of helping us all truly understand what their systems are dealing with. I would just like to, from the perspective of seeing how all of our rural communities and large communities have adapted to deal with a problem, and now probably 20 years ago when this became an issue, we should have been here dealing with this with a House file bill. However, I think this is a great step. I think we should go a step further. I think the textile industry, man-made materials like that, good luck, but they should be changed, because they do state that they are dissolvable, and we're finding that they may be dissolvable after 30 to 40 days. So if that textile industry can prove that they can dissolve like a Kleenex or a toilet paper or something within an hour or two, I think we would have a win-win across the board. But man-made geotextile or plastics that are formed to make these wipes, typically they come by cheap to make, and they are certainly easy to flush. I want to thank everybody here for listening today, and appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Tice, I saw that you were on the list. Do you want to hear from other testifiers, or do you want to ask your question of today's folks first?
Well, Thank you, Madam
Chair. It's so technical that, like, it might be okay to go as we ask as we go.
And I'm kind of, not really sure if I've got a question or just a comment. I'm not sold because when I was just looking, I think wipes, flushable wipes, were probably introduced in the 90s or the early 2000s. I remember right after I got married, I had hair down to my waist, and it was 1980, and our first house, I think we were not even there a year, and we had a major clog, and most of it was feminine hygiene products, but I hadn't been there long enough to accumulate. You know, and I think it's a guy thing. I had to go out and look at the thing, you know, when it unclogged it, I had to go look at it, and there was a lot of hair and things too, so somebody was flushing hair that they, I'm sure, picked up off the bathroom floor and flushed it. And of course, I got blamed because at that time my hair was super long.
I'm sure it wasn't your fault, Representative.
It wasn't my fault because I don't. I think we're hearing a lot about the flushable wipes, and I don't quite believe that they're the biggest culprit, because I grew up with a septic system, and learned really early on you just don't throw anything but TP down the toilet, period. And then we come up with all these things that are supposedly flushable, but people, like you said, I think they're used to throwing things. I mean, we didn't throw Kleenex down the toilet because Kleenex isn't the same as TP. Right. And you're very conscious of which TP is the best one to use. So I think, you know, a lot of times it's really easy to blame the product that says it's flushable, but I think there's a bigger problem than that. I think people are flushing things and have been for years that just shouldn't come close to a toilet. And somebody mentioned, you know, the campaign to do a better job of telling people really what is flushable. And I think we need to get back to that more than anything, is just because it says flushable doesn't mean it is. And then we owned a home for 12 years with our own septic system. And again, you just know what you're not going to do. And I have to say, we must have did a pretty good job because we really didn't have a lot of backups. But I really do believe our best point of defense is to get back to the education part and say, truly, this is what we need to do. I don't exactly know how we do it, but I think that is the best defense, because when I look at some of the other stats, flushable wipes are way down on the list of things. And owning different rental homes too and seeing different clogs, I'm not picking out flushable wipes. Maybe I'm just not looking for the right thing, but I think we're seeing a lot more things. People just don't take care of what they're flushing. And I really appreciate all the information. I know what you're talking about. I've seen some of the clogs. But I really think our biggest thing here is not to necessarily get rid of things. But here's flushable. We're talking flushable wipes. They're only a 1%. So I think we need to look at, you know, the paper towels and things that are get thrown away. And I know kids are really great too at throwing things down the toilet. I mean, tell me a parent who hasn't had to do some work because the kids threw something down the toilet. And I get that, but I really do. I would just superly, this skunk thing has really gone to everybody, but I really would suggest that our bigger thing is a campaign where we really are telling people, you just don't flush stuff down the toilet. I'm not going there.
Would somebody like to respond to that? And then we have two other testifiers on the list, and then we'll have further member discussion. Is that all right with everybody? Good. Okay.
Yes, Madam Chair, Madam Representative. I think the drawing this is the study I was referring to. In 2016, this was 2%. In 2012, this was 8%. It's not that the flushable wipes, the ones that this is the market and the researchers say these are truly flushable wipes. It's, yes, all of this other stuff that is mistaken for flushable wipes that are getting put in and shouldn't be flushed. And so the labeling would take care of that. If you had larger labeling that said, these truly are flushable, there's only 1% of the ones that are truly flushable that are getting tossed away, and you had a big sign on there for everything that wasn't flushable, I think that would help. Yes, I do believe we need the education. There are other things that are not supposed to be flushed that are in there. I would say when I look at my screens, and this is the wastewater that has gone through these grinders that Frank was talking about, they call them muffin monsters because they look like they have gnarly teeth. So they're supposed to chew up any larger solids that before they get pumped. Those products are, yes, feminine products and wipes materials. Wipes of all sorts, and a lot of them may be non-flushable, truly non-flushable, but people have the conception that they can flush those because they've seen on one package it says that it's flushable, so they think all cleaning wipes, all baby wipes are flushable. The education, of course, and you hit the nail on the head. When I was young, I didn't flush anything. We had a sewer septic system, and you didn't flush twice, and things like that that I won't mention, but you conserved, and definitely I think it hits home more to the people that own their septic system and their sanitary system than somebody who thinks they pay the bill and somebody else's problem. Well, that somebody else, like you say, might be your neighbor, that because you flushed those products, they got caught in the lateral in the street and caused a backup that somebody else had to pay for. Thank you.
Thank you. And we will have further member discussion after we hear from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Did you want to testify, or are you here for technical support? Okay. And I hope you guys will stick around because I think we'll have more questions for you. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we did have a change in plans, and Ms. Gauthier is unable to be here today. My name is Alexis Donath. I'm a legislative coordinator for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I'm joined by Joel Peck, who is a municipal liaison for the MPCA. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill. In our work with wastewater operators across the state, MPCA has heard over and over again, as you have today, about how costly the practice of flushing these wipes can be for cities, and ultimately for the ratepayers and taxpayers who already shoulder the cost burden of replacing aging infrastructure. These costs include increased staff time and effort. Wipe clogs can sometimes happen in lift stations where staff must pull up 700 to 800 pound pumps, disassemble them, remove the clog, and reassemble the pump. At the wastewater plant, staff are cleaning screens multiple times a day in an effort to prevent clogs. In addition to staff time, some cities have needed to invest in equipment such as more powerful lift stations or more powerful lift station pumps or expensive grinders that shred wipes into a smaller size. And I know you've heard a little bit about that today from other testifiers. Thirdly, cities and ratepayers also bear the cost of hauling away and landfilling material that is removed from the system or from screens at the wastewater treatment facility. The result is that cities must divert scarce resources away from their planned and routine maintenance efforts in order to deal with this problem. I'd like to ask Mr. Peck, who is MPCA's municipal liaison, to briefly describe how this problem has affected one Minnesota municipality with which he works.
Welcome to the committee. You can state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joel Peck, and I am the, as Alexis said, the municipal liaison for our municipal wastewater division. I've, in the past year, spent quite a bit of time with the city of Big Lake, working with the operator there. The city had just completed a project in which they swapped out 14 conventional pumps in their lift stations for 14 Vortex pumps. Vortex pumps are it's a different way of conveying waste through. They're more capable of passing the materials that come through that can't get ground up, or when do get ground up, can wrap around the mechanism. Vortex pumps run about $30,000 each, and the city of Big Lake really felt like they were doing the best thing to preserve their infrastructure. And after they had replaced these conventional pumps with Vortex pumps, they realized, oh my gosh, these fibers are passing through our fine screens and getting into our oxidation ditch. So they had dealt with the issue in the lift station, in the manholes. But what was happening was the problem is just getting moved down the pipe. No pun intended. It was getting through their headwork system, through the fine screens. They had quarter-inch fine screens, and they realized the fine screens are not fine enough. The fibers are still getting through and getting into the oxidation ditch and the mixers in the oxidation ditch. While I was out there, Charlie Gammon pulled up a basket full of wipes and dumped them right out on the fibers and right out of the oxidation ditch where they should not be. There's no reason these wipes should have been, or the fibers themselves should have been in the oxidation ditch. But right in front of me were the fibers from these, they're clearly plastic fibers and they weren't identifiable at this point anymore, but they were passing through the fine screens. So they undertook a project, I believe it was a $2 million project to replace their fine screens with even more fine screens. So this truly is a public investment problem. It's a issue of labeling, true enough, but it's something that we're all paying for in infrastructure costs. These are public infrastructure costs that we are all having to pay for.
Thank you for your testimony. Oh, are you wrapping up then?
Okay. One more thing. Just one additional issue that hasn't been discussed in detail is that these clogs do sometimes occur in private lines closer to people's homes. Where they can, those lines can become clogged and flood residents' basements with untreated sewage. In summary, Madam Chair, this is a good bill. It addresses a costly problem for Minnesota cities, and providing accurate labeling is one way to help provide consumers with the correct information about what is and is not flushable. MPCA shares the author's interest in addressing this problem, and we appreciate the committee taking the time to hear this bill today.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Welcome back to the committee. Mr. Quillis, you can state your name and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Just a couple points I wanted to reiterate that have been made already in front of me. Industry is aware of this issue and has been working on it. And I think in your packets, I'm not sure if it's in there or not, is a industry code of conduct. The first edition was in 2013 and was updated in 2017. And it was done in coordination with most of the major North American water and wastewater associations. But the two major changes from 2013 to 2017 are two important labeling requirements for flushable wipes. And they are: only products that come into contact with human waste should be labeled flushable, and baby wipes should not be labeled as flushable. Madam Chair, also in that packet, I don't know, like I said, I'm not sure if it's in your packet or not, but it sets up a decision tree as it goes through, as you move the product and how to label it. And it also establishes the industry standard for the label. It's the one we all see with the no flush. And if you wanted to really make sure, you add Mr. Tidy and goes through, and the industry standards specify where it should be on the package, on the shelf, on the box, and where those should be, Madam Chair. But it is important that the educational campaigns that we talked about are the key, and that they should be targeted and tailored, because most of the time when we see that, Portland, Maine had an award-winning program where their tagline was "Save the pipes, don't flush the baby wipes." They did a composition study before that, ran that intense campaign, and then there was a 40% reduction after that, Madam Chair. You saw the charts that were in there. Flushable wipes are down from starting in those studies in 2012, 2016, and then as recently as 2019, are down to 1 or 2% of the issues. And I wanted to draw your attention to first of all, there's a letter from the Association of Nonwoven Fabrics Industry in your packet. And then also the Pollution Control Agency on their website has a disposable wipes toolkit on how to go through, how to know your audience, multiple communication channels, what the key messages should be, and how to spread your message. You had heard the gentleman from Hutchinson talk about Facebook, Twitter pages, websites, newsletters, shoppers, civic organizations, church groups. That's the key. Education is the key here, because no matter what that label is, Madam Chair. We cannot, I still want to know how they got the shoes and the 2x4s down the toilet, but that showed up in there. But if people are going to flush it, no matter what that label is, I just wanted to make that key component that it is the education, Madam Chair, that is the key.
Thank you for your testimony. And just so you know, the decision tree and the handouts you referenced were in our packets. So if anybody wants to refer to them, I wanted to confirm that for you. Thank you. Member discussion. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, it sounds like the industry is in support of this labeling process. That's the sense I've got. This doesn't outlaw wipes, as I'm interpreting this bill. This is really just saying that things have to be labeled better. And it's funny that, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, if I'm one of these wipe manufacturers, I don't have to pay the cost for any of these pump stations. I've externalized my cost beyond my particular product. So that means I get more profit in that process. And I think this sort of speaks to, you know, in some ways, we've become a very disposable society. And if we can take something and make it go away, we make it go away. You know, like a few of my colleagues over there, I mean, I grew up in a house that had a septic system. And man, if something went wrong with that, that was like a huge catastrophe in our house. And I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, we need education, but we also need to make sure that these manufacturers of these products are labeling them appropriately. And if they don't want to label them, then maybe they shouldn't be selling them. And maybe, you know, an amendment to this that would just like outlaw these types of wipes. I mean, we could really go there and we would have a huge impact, because then it wouldn't be an issue of use and educating the public, because they'd no longer be available. So I appreciate this, and I think, yeah, absolutely we should do this, because in the end, this is going to save consumers money.
Thank you, Representative Dean.
You're welcome.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author of the bill, I was looking on your, well, I'm actually looking on the bill summary, but can you go over what the penalties are that you would, I think the civil penalties that you put on the manufacturers that don't label their product in the fashion that you're asking them to here? What are the penalties?
Representative Claflin.
And Chair Halverson and Representative Mahoney, yes, there are penalties in this bill that would allow up to $100 for each packaged unit, up to a maximum of $5,000 in that penalty. And that would go to the general fund.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of my problems with this is that disposable wipe manufacturers have, you know, put that cost onto the taxpayers, the people who are paying for the sewer system in their town, whether it's Minnetonka or St. Paul or, you know, wherever. I'm just not sure that's just strong enough problem on them. Now, I've had the joy of working at a metropolitan waste facility and being the low man on the totem pole and understand what the low man on the totem pole gets to do. I've cleaned two of these particulars. I think you should like take the manufacturer and require the CEO to have to clean that particular pipe or pump. That should be the punishment. It shouldn't be a dollar figure. It should be that son of a gun has to go get in the waiters and get the arm length gloves on and open up that pipe and start pulling it all out one at a time. I think the last one I did was a 7-hour project. It was a very fun moment. So if someone wants to say that these wipes are not a problem, you just are not understanding the particular problem in front of you. I mean, certainly it's nice to educate people. That's always a cheaper method if we can do it. But people don't seem to want to be understanding it, that these wipes going down a toilet are costing my city hundreds of thousands of dollars, or I should call the Met Council hundreds of thousands of dollars, because they have to stop, take pumps apart, take a valve off, because you can't get it through the valve anymore. This is an issue, and it's a real problem for the sanitary waste world, because it costs a ton of money to take that out. I was not cheap for those 7 hours, because they called me in the afternoon, in the evening, so it was time and a half. Wow. Because you can't hardly get people to come in. Those things are really messy and ugly. And any reason not to do overtime on that particular day is probably a pretty good statement. Because I never did it the third time. It's stupid, you know, do it twice when you should have learned the first time. So anyhow, I'm just saying this is a good bill. I hope it gets through. I hope the Senate takes it up and we'll take a look at it and see if we can make something happen, because I'd rather have my property tax spent on fixing the roads or plowing the roads than digging up the road.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney, and thanks for doing that work.
Not anymore.
Congratulations on your retirement. Representative Lislegard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am sold on this, and the reason why is the testifiers before us today, they work in that industry, and they do it day in and day out. They didn't come here and ask us for money or anything like that, the money that cost. And I happened to sit in front of them as a local elected official and was told about this problem, and they actually picked, very much like the testifier said, they pick these things out, and it is very burdensome on communities. I think the gentleman from Minnetonka, bless his heart and bless his wonderful district with 50,000 plus people with a gigantic budget. But in greater Minnesota, we don't have them gigantic budgets, and you start, you know, having $100,000, $200,000 issues in a population of 1,600, it's detrimental in a very, very big way. So the experts there were before us, and this was their recommendation, and I believe in it. So that's my comment.
Thank you, Representative Lislegard. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could ask Mr. Johnson from the League of Minnesota Cities and the Public Works Director, Mr. Gratke from Hutchinson, to come back. I have a few questions for them. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Madam Chair. The question that I'd like to pursue is, we talk about many things that are in the lines and in the systems, wipes being one of them, paper towels, feminine hygiene products, the list goes on of things. We even talked about some things that kids might put in, and as a young child, I've seen it happen. It's like, watch this, it's here, it's gone. Anything they get their hands on, they want to flush down the toilet. I'm sure that you've got a collection back at Public Works of things that you found over the years that are in your trophy case, if I could use that term. Yep, well, in addition to those items. What I want to know is the presence of other substances or items present in the system help or hurt the coagulation, if we can use that term, of the wipes and those kinds of things? Specifically, waste grease that gets into the system that doesn't get fully diluted from bacon grease or beef grease, pork grease, all of those different kinds of things that might find themselves into the system, where they may be going down my system warm enough with a detergent to cut it, but I know it also rests at some point when it cools and begins to stop in a gravity flow system and begins to coagulate. How does that, which we encourage people not to do that as well, how is that going to factor into what we're looking at here today?
I'd like to answer that. Go ahead and proceed.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I guess, yeah, I understand what you're talking about. Those are also things that we combat. Basically, our saying in the city is, and I think I speak for everyone, if it doesn't come out of your body and isn't toilet paper, it doesn't go down the drain. Those are the only two things that are allowed to really hit the sanitary sewer system, and that gravity, like you say, gravity flow part of the system is designed to help. Now, with all the water conservation also, we are taking out more and more of that flow, mm-hmm. which helps to take solids from the point of entry to the lift stations. And so now a system that was gravity flow designed to go at a certain flow and handle a certain amount of water per the amount of solids in that water is now cut in half or a quarter or even less. And so now the constituents of the makeup of the wastewater is more of a solid nature than it is a water or liquid type. So yes, the things are more apt to congeal, contain, you know, start blockages at any point, which it can. And obviously in colder weather, like you say, it might be nice and warm when you pour that bacon grease down and flush it with some hot water, but by the time it gets into the laterals in the street and down to the lift station, yes, that's where we end up getting that collected floating solidified grease and oil mat is usually on the surface of the lift station. Well.
Mr. Johnson.
And so, Madam Chair and Representative, to go to the non-operational level of this, we absolutely have lots of products that we have to worry about getting into the waste stream and dealing with if they get there, whether it's chemical or whether it's other things that contribute to causing plugs and pipes. But the point of this is really that what we're seeing, so you heard 1% in one particular study of the wipes going in were flushable. That means 99% of the ones that they were finding were not. What this is really all about, it's not banning a product. It's saying, let's make sure the accurate label is on it. So at least when we tell the public, don't flush these things, the label on the product agrees with it. And we will continue to work on whether there is a flushable wipe or not. But right now, there are definitions that have been agreed to that certain things are flushable. And certain products, in particular with healthcare-related uses, that are preferred to be flushed rather than thrown out in mixed municipal waste. And so we'll continue to work with that, but we're actually agreeing with the industry in this case. This bill actually says use the label that you say is the label you're recommending your industry uses, but let's not have it be a voluntary decision anymore. Let's make sure all the products have that label. If they're not flushable, it should say that on there. That's it.
Madam Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll, follow-up, and then we've got two more people on the list, so I want to just make sure we're keeping on track. Go ahead, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gretke actually pointed out the next set of things I was going to talk about, and that's the reduction of flow in gravity systems, and that can be very problematic, particularly if you have an under or developing area where there's a lot less water flow. And we've seen those issues not only in municipal systems, but in what I will call regional septic for some developments that might happen in townships or outside of municipal areas. So this is not just a question or an issue that's prevalent in the cities. I guess my question is, since cities go and code requires that in commercial operations that there be grease extracting and capturing systems so that they don't go down, why would we want to target just one area if this is a multi-pronged problem, flows, those kinds of things? Why aren't we here today saying let's have more of a statewide campaign and an educational program, since we tend to like to do that at the legislature, and just targeting labeling instead of educating people about how their systems work and the costs associated with that, instead of just targeting a particular individual product and requiring additional labeling on that?
Who would like to respond to that? Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I'll start again with the higher level, which is our cities are doing that. And there are, as I believe Mr. Quillis showed with some of his presentation, materials on the state agency websites assisting cities with figuring out what are the messages we can give, what are the tools we can use to get it out. But our water utilities spend a tremendous amount of time coordinating with each other and with the state agencies to come up with the best materials to educate the public on the whole slate of issues that we have to deal with in our water utilities. And so this is absolutely is only addressing one piece of the problem. If you have ideas on other things that would be good for statewide program, I'm sure we could come up with ways we can work on that. But for the problem we've identified here, which is these big plugs that are forming, the wipes are a major factor in it, and we just want to get an accurate label on to help us with the education we have to do to try and lessen that.
I have a question, actually. So we see a lot of wipes online that I actually just did a Google search on flushable wipes, and I found tons of products. How sure are consumers at this stage of the game with labeling that what they have in their house is actually flushable that meets the standards that you guys are looking for? Do we have, can consumers currently count on the labeling that we have? Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, I don't know what the consumer confidence in those labels is. I do know that whether something is labeled flushable or not is highly debatable. There are products labeled as flushable that end up not being of the standard that the industry has agreed to for what is flushable. And there are recent FCC decisions of companies who were caught doing that. So I don't know the answer to your more general question, but I do know that we need to be a little, if the labeling requirement was required, it would help make sure that the right products were labeled properly better. We wouldn't have false labeling or a product that wasn't flushable that just kind of ignored putting anything on about whether it was flushable or not and hope that kept the business up.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Tamke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In interest of time, I can talk to the author offline.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, and to the author, if this bill were to become law as it is written right now, what behavior that is taking place today would be illegal under this act?
Representative Claflin.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, it would be illegal to sell the products that are labeled flushable that do not meet the requirements set by the industry standard.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and the author, it would be illegal to sell them or be illegal to produce them? Elaborate when you say sell. We're not talking about retailers, correct?
Representative Claflin.
Chair and Representative Garofalo, Subdivision 2, starting on line 2.14, prohibits the sale in the state of anything that is advertised, packaged, labeled as flushable, septic, or sewer safe unless it meets the definition.
Representative Garofalo.
So, Madam Chair, to the author, so that is retailers?
Representative Claflin.
To the chair and Representative Garofalo, the intention is to go back to the manufacturers, and that could be clarified.
Representative Garofalo. No further questions. I don't have anybody else on the list. I have one more question, actually. If somebody could clarify who pays when somebody else's sewer backs up into your house. Is it covered by our insurance? Is it, you know, your homeowner's insurance? Or if the cities aren't covering it, does your neighbor's homeowner's insurance cover it? Who pays for that? I would rather live in a house with a ghost. So I'm curious about that. Who pays?
Madam Chair, I guess it would all depend if a claim is filed against the city and the city is found to be at fault for negligence within the laterals under the street, outside of the property owner's control and responsibility, then I guess would actually, you know, we as a city are covered under insurance also. Would be the league's insurance trust that would probably pay out in our behalf.
Thank you for that answer. Any further discussion, members? Seeing no further discussion, we have the motion on the table to move House File 3181 to be re-referred to Environment Policy. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion prevails, and you are on your way, Representative.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, just as a heads up for tomorrow, we have another PACT committee agenda. We will likely go over time tomorrow. We will not go any later than 5 p.m. for sure. And so enjoy your evenings, everybody, tomorrow. But we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow afternoon. And we are adjourned.
Madam Chair. Oh,
Representative O'Driscoll.
I do believe that at least the Republicans have caucus at 4:30 on that date, for whatever that's worth to your planning.
Then we have a hard stop at 4:30. I appreciate that information. We are adjourned.